Good afternoon, and welcome to this special IJ Live call on strategic giving in 2020. I'm Melanie Hildreth, IJ's Vice President for External Relations. I also direct our Four Pillars Society, which honors supporters who provide for IJ as part of their estate and financial planning. With me this afternoon is the Society's in-house counsel, IJ attorney Rob Pakola. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks so much, Melanie. Great to be here.
Listeners probably know that although deadlocked on many things this year, Congress still managed to pass trillions of dollars in spending earlier in the year in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And our discussion this afternoon is designed to describe a few aspects of some of that legislation that could impact your charitable and other financial planning. We wanted to start with the pieces of legislation that deal with charitable giving, and we'll close by touching on a couple of other considerations you may want to be aware of. We can't cover everything. There was a lot in this legislation, but we were going to try to pick a few highlights. We are aiming to share information and not offer tax advice, so always want to be sure to remind people that it's important to meet with an advisor, and I think if ever there were a year that we all need professional help, this is probably it. So with that said, Rob, let's start by talking about the CARES Act. Can you remind listeners what that was?
Sure. As readers of Liberty and Law may recall from our reporting, it stands for the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act. That is a $2 trillion, and that's trillion with a T, spending bill that Congress passed in March as a response to this ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. This law has a wide array of provisions, everything from $500 billion to the Treasury Department for lending to business and local governments, to suspending eviction proceedings in federally backed housing for 120 days. So this really does run the gamut.
So a lot of those are probably going to be things that sound familiar to people from the news or other sources. Maybe some of the less known pieces of the legislation did have to do with charitable giving. What do people need to know about that?
Well, the alert siren for our donors is that for the 2020 tax year only, they can deduct up to 100% of their adjusted gross income for cash gifts made to public charities like IJ. In the past, as in last year, the highest share of income that a donor could deduct was 60%. So this is an incredibly dramatic change. What Congress is doing here is really incentivizing people to give big and, frankly, acknowledging the importance of private charity in healing society during these unprecedented times. So with these rapid legislative changes, as you said, Melanie, this really is a good time to talk to your tax advisor. Depending on your tax bracket, if you do take advantage of some of these CARES provisions, you might even be able to save more on your taxes if you were to carry forward some of that deduction to the next year.
So to help people get a handle on what that means, the increase, and how it's a change, could you give a simple example? So if, for instance, my adjusted gross income is $100,000 and I'm itemizing my charitable contributions to reduce taxable income, how does a giving scenario play out this year as compared to last year?
So last year, under the rule as it stood then, if a generous donor gave all of that $100,000 in income to charity, they would only be able to reduce their taxable income by 60%, or $60,000. For 2020 only, however, this CARES Act allows itemizers to deduct contributions of up to 100% of their AGI. So that same donor with that AGI of $100,000 can deduct all $100,000 in charitable contributions and wipe out their income tax liability entirely.
Now, there are a few caveats, as there often are when we get good things from our lawmakers. For instance, the increase here does not apply to giving to private foundations. It does not apply, unfortunately, to giving to donor-advised funds. And it also applies only to cash. Is that right?
That's correct. Another example is the limit for gifts of appreciated long-term capital gains property like securities to charities is still 30% of AGI. So there's that old saying, cash is king, and that definitely applies with giving under CARES. So the best way to take advantage of that increase in deduction is with a cash gift.
So for people who maybe don't have that kind of cash on hand, you know, in terms of non-cash gifts, we have talked in the past on previous sort of smart giving calls that we've done about how tax-effective gifts from retirement accounts can be. As we've described, this can be really especially true when the government mandates that you take a distribution from these accounts and you don't need that income or the taxes that come with it. In that situation, a good option in a typical year is to make what's known as a qualified charitable distribution, which allows you to donate money directly from a retirement account to a qualified charity like IJ. The charity doesn't pay tax on the donation, so the full value goes to something that you care about, and that kind of gift allows you to both meet the required minimum distribution or more and make a gift without, you know, do that without recognizing it as income. Now, most years, that's a good option for people to think about, but this year, that calculus has changed a little bit. Is that right, Rob?
That's right. As you described, these IRA gifts are incredibly meaningful. IJ has been the beneficiary of many wonderful gifts in this area where folks can really make a difference, and it is also an area where Congress has really been making rapid changes. The CARES Act gave folks a year off, essentially, from these mandatory IRA distributions. And in addition, Congress also raised the age at which those distributions become mandatory from 71 and a half to 72. So the way I like to think about it is there's sort of a one-time change and a longer-time change going on. The one-time change is that there's no required distribution this year, which the idea being those accounts need some time to recover. We do expect that to return in 2021. The longer-term change is that increase in age of up to 72 for the distributions to become mandatory. But all that said, even in 2020, as things stand now, starting at age 70 and a half, donors can still make what's called a qualified charitable distribution of up to $100,000 to IJ from their IRA without realizing any income or paying any taxes on that money. And this could really be more advantageous than, let's say, receiving that income into your account and then getting a charitable deduction for making the gift, especially since many of you folks listening might not be itemizing because the standard deduction is so high. You know, keeping income lower also staves off things like higher premiums for Medicare Part B. So it's one of those situations where for folks who really want to keep their income as low as possible, that's a way to do it.
Well, and while we're talking about this topic, we did actually have a question submitted in advance from another Rob in Pennsylvania. He thinking about this kind of gift, and he was wondering, assuming that the required minimum distribution will be reinstated in 2021, as we do assume now, he was thinking about postponing his usual end-of-year giving to January and then giving again in December to try to get the maximum benefit. And he was curious to get our comments on his strategy in that.
Well, thank you so much for reaching out, Rob. You are thinking in the right direction because the calendar year that you give is really the thing that determines whether your gift is the most beneficial for you. And it is kind of a moving target. That said, if the tax year that you want to have that advantage is the tax year where it's mandatory, doing it in January as opposed to December of this year, I think might make a lot of sense. And the additional point you made about dividing it up between a January and a December distribution to IJ, I think is a great idea. You know, having that kind of steady support for a charity really helps meet those annual budget needs that happen during those critical times at the beginning and end of the year. So I like your thinking.
One other consideration as we were talking about your scenario, Rob, is it wasn't 100. It wasn't completely clear whether your thinking was, you know, make all of these distributions from that IRA account just at different times, or if it was, well, what about some from the retirement account, meet that requirement distribution maybe in January, and then give other gifts of other kinds in December, and then kind of combine them for the maximum deduction. And I did just want to flag that, you know, you can't combine them in that way. If you make the cash gift, you do get the deduction, and a big one if it happens to be this year, as Rob described. But if you're making a qualified charitable distribution, the tax benefit comes from not realizing the income. You can't, unfortunately, also claim a deduction on that. So that's just something to consider as you were thinking about the different sources of funds for charity, that you can't, unfortunately, kind of double dip that way.
Yeah, and one more tip on this is that if you do want to make a distribution, we recommend, you know, don't wait until the very last minute in December to do it, because getting things in motion earlier ensures that you're going to be able to count it as a 2020 gift if that's what you're aiming for. There's sometimes a several week delay from the administrators and getting those checks out when you make that direction. So it needs to be deposited in the actual charity bank account by the end of the year. So, you know, in litigation, we always try to avoid fire drills, and I guess this is another area where it's the same advice, that planning ahead can really help you avoid the possible penalties when the required minimum distribution is back in play next year.
So at the risk of drowning in alphabet soup while we're talking about retirement accounts, there was another piece of legislation. We've already discussed the CARES Act. This other one was the SECURE Act, setting every community up for retirement enhancement. I had to check notes for that. as the name implies, it has to do a lot with retirement accounts. It made changes to contribution and withdrawal rules. And Rob, can you talk about the changes that law makes in leaving IRA money to heirs? It just got more expensive, right?
That's right. It did get more expensive. But we always try to focus on the positive things in life. And the corollary is that under the SECURE Act, leaving IRAs to charity got smarter. The SECURE Act requires non-spouse heirs to take out all of the money out of that inherited IRA account within 10 years. Prior to this legislation, those heirs could take it out across the entire span of their life expectancy and spread out the tax pain accordingly. Now that is all condensed into a 10-year period. It's important because when that heir takes money out of an IRA account that they've inherited, they have to pay income taxes on that money. So if you leave, let's say, a $10,000 IRA to a child living in California, for example, the government could end up with more than half of it. So the SECURE Act means that inheriting an IRA comes with fewer advantages for heirs than before, a bigger, faster income tax bill. But IRA money is great as a bequest to charity like IJ because we don't pay taxes.
So while we're talking about lower tax liabilities, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the new above-the-line deduction that was part of the legislation that went through earlier this year, $300. So small but welcome.
That's right. Taxpayers who do not itemize deductions, which, as we mentioned, is becoming more and more people these days, can deduct up to $300 for an individual or $600 for a married couple for cash gifts to charity on top of the standard deduction. So for those who don't itemize this year, this above-the-line deduction, though modest, is certainly welcome. So hopefully Congress will increase that $300 over time if donors out there take advantage of it and they see that it's popular.
So in a couple of minutes, we'll take questions from listeners. And if you're on the line and you have a question, you can press star on your phone to be added to the queue. But before we turn to Q&A, I did want to touch on a couple of other items. As I mentioned earlier in the call, we wanted to talk about the charitable planning first because that's kind of our area where we play the most. But there were a couple of other things that we thought worth mentioning just so that folks are aware. Let's start with being able to access retirement savings penalty-free. Rob, can you talk about that?
Yes. Access to cash, again, is what the legislation is really focusing on. As part of CARES, the federal government is allowing people to withdraw up to $100,000 from their qualified retirement plans for financial hardships resulting from the coronavirus. Maybe you or someone in your family was diagnosed with COVID-19 or faced some other financial hardship connected to this pandemic. If taxpayers are under the age of 59 and a half, withdrawing that cash typically means a 10% early distribution penalty, which is now waived for these coronavirus-related distributions in 2020. Though a caveat, which is that the taxation on that withdrawal would still apply, but the penalty would not.
And again, that there were a lot of things related to retirement accounts that were part of this act. So if you're kind of in that situation and thinking about, you know, the all of the new implications as far as how much you can add to your retirement in a given year or, you know, things like that, we do urge you to seek some more information because it was a lot of changes. So the other thing not related to retirement accounts that we wanted to mention is not actually legislation either, but an executive order. So again, people may have heard, callers on the line, earlier this summer, the president signed a presidential memorandum that declared that payroll tax obligations for workers at different income levels, mostly earning below about $100,000, would be deferred through the end of 2020. So, Rob, the thing we're flagging here is that this is a deferral, not a cut. Can you talk about what that means for people?
Well, that's right, and folks really should take heed. It might be better to think of this one as a payroll tax holiday than a tax cut. President Trump issued an executive order, which took effect last month on September 1st, allowing workers who earn less than approximately $100,000 to qualify for this payroll tax deferral through the end of the year. In theory, that puts money back in workers' pockets to help stimulate the COVID-weary economy, but workers would need to repay that deferred tax by the end of April. So it might be a good idea for folks who are seeing that increased amount of money in their check to just touch base with your employer or the accounting department where you work just to make sure you don't get caught by surprise when April rolls around.
It can be rough enough anyway.
That's right.
We don't want to make it any harder on anybody. With that, we'll turn to questions. So if you have a question, remember, you can ask it live. Just press star on your phone, and we will try to get to you. And if you have, there are probably folks on the line also who have questions that you might be thinking like, oh, other people probably wouldn't be interested because what you have to talk about is something that's more specific. We can't offer specific tax advice, as I mentioned, but we would be glad to talk to anybody one-on-one. So you can reach out to me or Rob after the call or when it suits you, and we would be glad to take your question and talk through options with you. In the meantime, we did have a few questions submitted ahead of time, so we'll get to those while people are thinking. One was from Deidre in Colorado, and she asked what resources IJ makes available to attorneys who help clients with charitable plans.
Great question, Deidre. We have several options and resources for folks. The first is our plan giving website, which does have a page for advisors and attorneys. You can find that by visiting ij.plangiving.org. And we have a few different brochures and other materials that we can send along to supporters as well. These aren't sales pitch brochures. These are more practical, step-by-step instructions, sample language with things like our legal name and tax ID. I guarantee that when you sit down with your attorney or advisor that you want to provide for a charity in your plans, those are the first questions that you're going to get. And those are a good thing to have handy when you're ready to discuss those plans. And of course, we're also here as a resource for you. I'm happy to answer questions that you or your attorneys might have. So always feel free to reach out, and we can always look up answers that we don't know offhand. So we're here to have that dialogue with you.
We also had a question from Linda in Florida ahead of time, and she actually was curious about a different aspect of the CARES Act, that one that we haven't talked about, and that was whether IG applied for any of the funds available to small businesses and nonprofit organizations. And I can take that one because it's easy. I'll give all the hard ones to Rob, but this one, the answer is just no. We did not. Our policy, you know, at IJ is not to solicit or accept government funding. That was true this year, too, so we did not apply for or receive any of that funding.
And I think it's worth mentioning that we are busier than ever without that funding. You know, we have kept up the good fight here at IJ, and it really is thanks to the heroism of our donors. And in fact, two of those donors stepped up in a really big way to make it possible for us to do even more right now and in real time, as well as into the future.
We do have a couple of folks live, so I will we'll turn to those now. Let's see, we've got Phil from Maryland. Phil, you are live. What's your question?
I may have misunderstood this, but there seemed to be a suggestion going along here that to take full advantage of the 100% deductibility of cash gifts, that it was possible to mix that with property gifts. That is, you could still give contributions of 30% of appreciated property or any property and make up the other 70% in cash. I believe that's incorrect, that once you get property into the equation, then you're back to a 50% limit. Similarly, I think you cannot carry forward any gifts under the new legislation. If you give away 102% of your AGI this year, you cannot carry the 2% forward into 2021. But if I'm wrong about that, I'd be pleased, very pleased, to be so informed.
You know, I think that the carry forward would be more advantageous if within the basket of 100%, you only wanted to write off, let's say, maybe 80% and carry forward 20% to next year. But I think you're correct that above that amount, the example you gave of 102% would not. But, you know, if we do go back to the standard AGI rates next year, it's worth talking to your advisor to see if it would be worth splitting that up to carry forward to the next year.
Okay. We have a question or comment from Arthur in Pennsylvania. Let's see. Arthur, you are live. What is your question or comment?
Okay. Thank you. Like many people, after the big tax reform, I started giving from the IRA rather than from regular income. And I found that some organizations have a separate kind of acknowledgement letter that recognizes that it's from the IRA, and I was just going to suggest that to IJ. The other thing that I think, again, like many people with the IRA holiday that you mentioned, it's going to be very tempting to bundle contributions in a double contribution in 2021, and I suspect that that's what I'll end up doing and that many other people were doing. So I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I can take the first piece of your comment, which is the IRA acknowledgement. We do try to recognize in our acknowledgement letters that this was a gift made directly from the IRA at Fidelity or whatever the organization was that held the funds. It's not always clear from the checks that come to us. Sometimes it's very clear because they send a cover letter or some other collateral material that indicates it was a qualified charitable distribution or a direct gift from the account. But if you want to be sure that we know that, please let us know that that's the kind of gift that you're going to make, and we'll be sure that that also is reflected in the letter that we send to you.
Thank you.
And then, Rob, if you wanted to...
Yeah, you know, we're more than happy to have a very good January when folks have their RMDs kicking back in, and if you do elect to do that and wait until that kicks in January, that's more than fine with us. We're just grateful for the support.
All right, we had a question from Ed in New York. Ed, you're live.
Thank you. I actually have two questions. The first has to do with the 10-year IRA limit now. I presume, since the value of the IRA will vary from year to year, I presume it's just a good faith every year you have to take out 10% of what's there until the fund is exhausted. And my second question is, this year, because of the odd financial situation that many of us had, my income is down, but my charitable contributions are up. So assuming that my charitable contributions wipe out my income, but I still itemize the rest, my business deductions, healthcare, things like that, I can still carry those forward into 2021, can't I?
Maybe I'll start with your first question first, which is that when there are these inherited IRAs and there is that 10-year span, I think you are right that there is a sort of approximate amount that people will set as a target. But my sense is that what they're probably hoping is that this income has been growing tax-free for a long time, and they're probably hoping that it will actually be less than 10 years and that folks will, if they inherited an IRA account, will drain it as soon as possible. And then, of course, pay the taxes. In terms of the carry forward on all the other things that I don't want to say the wrong thing about what the state and local and other deductions would play into this in terms of carrying those forward. So we'd be happy to get back to you on that though.
I let Ed go, so he'll just have to accept that. We'll get back to you, Ed, with some thoughts on that. And, you know, there is going to be a limited amount that we'll be able to say about state and local because, you know, that's, you know, why we always make the comment about talking to a professional who's really steeped in what's going on in your area, because places like New York can be especially complicated, as I'm sure you sadly know quite well. We have time for one last question, and we will go to Joseph in Missouri. Joseph, you are live in our last question. What's your question?
Hi. I'm in Denver now. If it's Joe Gensheimer, but
You.
And it's me. Who do right? Anyway, what can I say? We certainly have lots of opportunities, and this call is fantastic. But what I'm wondering is, we already donated, my wife and I misspoke, and we both donated appreciated stock, so we're way over this year, so we can only take 30% against HGI. but let's say we did that, and we give the rest as 70% cash. That doesn't affect our rollover, does it, of the appreciated stock by chance? We donated to our donor advised funds is what we had done accidentally.
So you would parse it out where you carried forward the securities contributions, but then claim the cash contribution for this year?
Correct. So Tressa, you can take it up to 70% is what you were saying. I thought you had to do, you know, maximum of 60%, 30-30, 30 appreciated, 30 cash. But you're saying you can actually give up to 100% cash.
That's right. Although the big caveat is that for the donor advised funds, they are excluded from that. It's a direct contribution to take advantage of the 100%.
Right. And so what we could do is we could give, I don't know, some amount of money to IJ directly, and that could bring us up toward the 100%. You could still do the 30% appreciated stock, 30% to donor advised, and the remaining 40% has to be direct.
Yeah, and I think that your idea of carrying forward, if you can, the securities might be a way to balance that out too, depending on what you anticipate 2021 looking like.
Well, I turn 70 and a half, and I can distribute in 2022, and I would, you know, give away the money in our IRAs, minimum required distribution. But so I still have, 2 years. I'm probably not going to be able to use all that, appreciate, rollover. But I'm just wondering for everyone else if we can put 30% into appreciated stock, which is always nice, 30% into a donor advised fund, and then the remaining 40% to organizations such as iCheck.
Well, yeah, I mean, any amount of cash up to 100%, including 40%, is absolutely going to be deductible. So that's right.
Yes. Okay. So I just wanted to make sure it didn't affect the deductibility of cash to a donor advised fund. Thanks.
And you're
Thank you for calling.
Yes, and you're the perfect example, Joe, because you're doing everything that we described. We got the cash, the stock, the charitable qualified charitable distribution in future years. So,
well, yeah, and you're thinking ahead. We like that. Thank you for taking advantage and for planning far in advance.
So, with Joe as promised, we are out of time for questions. Thank you, Rob, for your insights and, to everyone on the phone. If you did miss part of the conversation, we'll have links to an audio recording and a transcript available next week on the website where you registered for the call. If you have questions or comments that we weren't able to get to or something that you didn't want to mention on the phone, please just stay on the line and you can actually leave a message and we will get back to you, as soon as we can. You're also welcome to email me directly or my colleague Megan Cook at the emails where we invited that we sent the invitations from. So again, we welcome questions, comments, and contributions, of course. So thank you again and have a great evening.
Thanks so much, Melanie.